Welcome to another episode of the Radonk on the Run podcast. Today is a very, very special day as we're kind of doing a deep dive into World Radiotherapy Awareness Day. And I'm joined today by Professor Sandra Turner, radiation oncologist at the University of Sydney and co-chair of World Radiotherapy Awareness Day. So Dr. Turner, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. So before we get into World Radiotherapy Awareness Day, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners, some of your background, your work at the University of Sydney, and how advocacy and education kind of became such an important part of your career?
Sure. So I'm a radiation oncologist in Sydney, Australia. Mainly my background is in GU and sarcoma radiotherapy. And sort of fairly early on in my career, I became particularly interested in education. And through our college, which is the training body in Australia and New Zealand, more than the universities actually, I took on some senior roles, including the chair of the education committee. And I was an examiner for the final exams and became the chief examiner over time. And also had some other roles in terms of being on the faculty council, but particularly in education, that was my passion. And in terms of linking to the university, I have quite a strong role in educating medical students in our oncology block, and really sort of worked hard over years to push radiation oncology into the general oncology curriculum because, as is the case in many parts of the world, we were really underdone in terms of the cancer curriculum with respect to how important radiation oncology and radiotherapy are for cancer patients. So having done those educational roles, as I was sort of transitioning away from that, I was also having discussions, as many of us have done, about lack of awareness of radiotherapy. And part of that is doctors, physicians generally, which is why I was interested in the medical student education, but also just across the population and in our community. And our organisation, again, like many others, had been wringing our hands for years about how people didn't know about radiotherapy. We were misunderstood. People didn't know, even in the health sector, people didn't know about us. Other physicians and health professionals didn't really know anything about radiotherapy and primary carers, or what we would call GPs. Also were not educated about radiotherapy. So how could they optimally refer and help their patients who are either appropriate for radiotherapy or undergoing courses of radiotherapy or in follow-up, in fact, after treatment? So to me, it became clear that we either kept on complaining about this because it wasn't something that was going to fix itself, or we took some active steps. And one of those was about education of health professionals and particularly medical students, but also about raising awareness in the community and starting to break down some of those myths and misconceptions and fears that we all know people have about radiotherapy, which are barriers towards people actually receiving the radiotherapy they need. And in many parts of the world, of course, those are really quite dire with respect to lack of radiotherapy services, lack of understanding, lack of patient and community awareness. So it became one of the priorities of the organisation I volunteered for, which was, again, our college, to actually look at this issue and solving the problem about community and health professional awareness. And I became the founding clinical lead on that as a volunteer. And it was an initiative of a group of us and backed by the college, and we had a one-year PR company lead that helped us set up with our vision and our messaging and our branding, and that's what became Targeting Cancer. And that was predominantly an awareness campaign with lots of information outward facing for patients and communities and their families, but also a stream dedicated to the education of not only health professionals in the hospital and medical students, but particularly primary carers and GPs. And we actually brought general practitioners into the department. They could get some CPD, CME points, whatever you would call them, and actually update their learning about modern radiotherapy. And they were really keen to do this because they understood that they weren't adequately educated. And basically, all of this is an education piece, which extended from my interest. And that sort of fed into my getting strongly into advocacy for radiotherapy generally. That campaign is still going 10 years later. It has had high impact, particularly in our part of the world. Yeah.
Wow. No, that's fascinating. And I think we see that in the United States as well, where there's certain misperceptions or conceptions as far as what radiotherapy is, how it's incorporated into the patient journey. And we know that a large percentage of patients with cancer need radiotherapy in the curative setting. And so, yeah, that education and update is very critical for sure. Mm.
And even in the palliative setting, I don't know about the States, but we had a lot of people that would clearly benefit from short courses of palliative radiotherapy and were not getting referred because other physicians didn't understand the role, you know, and the value in maybe reducing analgesics and all of those things that, even if you can't cure patients, could massively improve people's quality of life.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that brings us kind of to World Radiotherapy Awareness Day, because we're approaching that in a few short weeks here. So where did that idea specifically originate? And then why do you believe radiotherapy needs its own global awareness day?
Yeah. It was sort of a bit of a thought bubble I'd had for quite a long time. And we had been involved, as had many advocates for radiotherapy, in World Cancer Day, which some of your listeners will know, which is associated with the UICC, and that's in February. And so we'd done work sort of through targeting cancer and outside supporting World Cancer Day. But it became apparent to me that because radiotherapy, despite its importance, is a fairly, you know, niche area in terms of numbers of professionals and advocates, we weren't cutting through. And I think World Cancer Day shows the power of having a global platform where people can, from all around the world, depending on what their particular angle or issues or challenges are, could use that to promote, you know, what they were particularly passionate about or needy for in their regions. But looking at the media and social media and cut through that came out of that, you could see that radiotherapy or radiation therapy, we know that both of those are used, and in Australia we flip and flop between them, but just for the purposes of World Radiotherapy Awareness Day, we decided to stick with radiotherapy anyway. And that's just an aside. But yes, it was clear that awareness days have impact. They provide inspiration, a platform for people to get involved, but it was not really serving the radiotherapy community or patients needing it very well. So, look, I'm sure I'm not the only person that thought of it, but this thought bubble had been there for quite a while. I'd sort of cast off my responsibilities for the targeting cancer. I was still really keen to be involved with advocacy. And I sort of jokingly said to a colleague, look, before I retire, I'm going to make sure there's a World Radiotherapy Awareness Day. Little did I know how much work it would be, and also what a global movement it would become so quickly. And first of all, I actually reached out to a colleague who's a clinical oncologist in the UK, Katie Wakeham. I knew she'd been a strong advocate, particularly for poorer African countries where they were very limited in their radiotherapy services. I knew she was very excited about this kind of work. And so we set up as co-founders and co-chairs of the campaign, and we've pulled together a small group of volunteers initially that also had enthusiasm around this. And then over quite a rapid period of time and a lot of talking to societies around the world, we have now got 88 professional radiotherapy societies from around the world, including the big ones like ASTRO and ESTRO, mm-hmm. on board with supporting the campaign. So that was very important in giving it credibility and empowering the small number of us that were working on it to actually, you know, set this as a day and upscale it. If I can tell you a bit more about how we've done that, if that's the right time to do this.
Yeah, I think that sounds great.
Yeah. So we obviously we did the same process. I'd learned a lot from Targeting Cancer, so we knew the strength of the brand, of a brand, of a logo, of having a theme, which is one voice for radiotherapy, at least for the first 3 years, and something that was making it easier for other people to get involved, but without telling them what they needed to do or what was the right thing for their region. Because, of course, people, as I've said before, people's challenges are different in different parts of the world.
Sure.
And so we reached out and offered for people to become regional champions of the campaign and offered to support them, bring people together as a network so they could get ideas from each other, talk to each other, link up with other people in their regions. The vast majority of these are radiation oncology professionals of different types, but we've also got some really strong patient advocates and patient survivor groups that are also our sort of focus from now and going forward, because we know that patients and survivors have a particularly strong voice in being able to break through, particularly when it comes to engaging governments and decision makers in decisions around investment in health services. So with that keen group of regional champions, which now span all continents except Antarctica, we now have got a really strong group of connected people that chat all the time, connect. Now we've had 3 meetings so far, and that has really helped people have ideas, share their thoughts, discuss events and collaborations, which have really sort of rapidly escalated the activity around the world. And what we're encouraging people to do is to not see this just as a day, but as a global movement and campaign that they can use to support and make some noise around radiotherapy. Obviously, peaking and focusing around September the 7th, mm-hmm. Which is World Radiotherapy Awareness Day. And in that way, attract media, social media, and have that cut through that we weren't able to get through World Cancer Day.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I think I know the answer to this, but how was September 7th picked as kind of the World Radiotherapy Awareness Day?
Yeah, well, we went through a process, and actually one of our first sort of engagement pieces to try and get a lot of people involved with the planning exercise before we got very far was to have some of those get input about the day, the colours. We voted on the logo, and I think that helped have people engage in this being their campaign. We didn't want to be telling people what to do. We knew we couldn't do it all. So we needed people to really embrace this as their own. And one of those pieces was putting forward some days. There were a few days that you'd know of in November: Marie Curie's birthday, Röntgen, the day Röntgen discovered X-rays, and various other events. But there's quite a crush around that time with International Medical Physicist Day and various other things. So that seemed a bit crowded. We didn't want it in the earlier part of the year. And in fact, when we spoke to UICC and World Cancer Day, they were very keen to partner with us and completely understood the need for a separate day. But they said, don't crush it in the first part of the year because we want World Cancer Day to stand out. So we had the rest of the year. And then one of our physicist supporters, actually from the UK, he said, what about September the 7th? That was the first day a patient was ever treated on a modern linear accelerator in 1953 at Hammersmith Hospital in London. And the second patient, or the second clinical linear accelerator, was actually in Stanford a year later. And they don't look very modern now, but I guess the point then was that this was really a huge advance from the, you know, radioisotopes and cobalt era. And it really aligned nicely with our message about we don't just want people to get any old radiotherapy. We want people to get world-class, modern, sophisticated, safe, high-quality radiotherapy. And we also needed to support the highly trained radiotherapy workforce that could actually help deliver this. So it seemed to sort of tick quite a few boxes. It's nicely separated from other days, and that's how the decision came about.
Yeah, that's great. I think the historical significance kind of will resonate forever, obviously, and it makes it that much more meaningful. So that's neat. Obviously, you've said that every patient kind of deserves the benefit of high quality radiotherapy. So again, access, everyone that actually needs it can actually receive it. How far do you feel we are from achieving that goal more globally?
Yeah, good question. And then the next question is, you know, how we know that we're going to achieve it, and how do we know we're moving towards that? And it's difficult. It's really difficult with awareness campaigns and actually getting, you know, the direct relationship between what you're doing and impact. Look, you obviously have to have a bit of blind faith that if you don't keep on making a noise about things and agitating and get the messaging out there and influencing communities and politicians, then you can only go backwards. And particularly in a world where we all know that there's just a tsunami of cancer coming our way, and that's growing all the time with the aging population, if we don't keep on with strong advocacy efforts, we're not even going to stay in the same place. And as you said, there's still a large gap, even in wealthy countries in the world, in people accessing radiotherapy. Some of that is not due to services. There might be enough machines, but it's these myths, misconceptions, inadequate referral pathways, poor funding, geographical distance, and all those things that come into play, even in the more wealthy countries. So, I mean, for instance, in Australia, the gap is that at the moment, about one in three patients access radiotherapy, when it should be about one in two or even more now, where more people are being retreated and we know it's safe to give retreatment. And that's, you know, in a high socioeconomic country. In some parts of the world, we know that millions of people are missing out and lives are lost. There are still 20 countries in Africa that don't have one single radiation machine. And there's countries like Nigeria with, you know, tens of millions of people in their population, and they may at any one time only have a handful of working linear accelerators. So in some places, the gap is a crisis. In others, not so bad. But I don't think there's any country in the world where there's not more we can do to improve the understanding and access to radiotherapy.
Sure.
Only the really, you know, at scale economic evaluations of radiotherapy need and workforce can answer the questions about, you know, utilization and who's getting it. And as you know, that is sort of periodically updated. At the moment, when you look across changes over, say, 10 years of radiotherapy utilization, the gap is probably similar in most countries as it was previously. So I think we're not realistic to think that we're ever going to completely have, you know, the need met by the services. But as I said, you know, the fact that the gap is stable is perhaps some indication that while the cancer incidence is growing and growing and growing, that we're actually making some headway. Not yet with this campaign, but with the multiple efforts and campaigns around the world. And we acknowledge lots of those things are going on. And I hope the World Radiotherapy Awareness Day will be one way of tying a lot of those things together. But because we're speaking with one voice for radiotherapy and concentrated around one part of the year and the same messaging and similar goals and objectives, I think it can only increase the power of the voice and amplify the efforts that are already underway.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I think just as like the radiation oncologists listening, whether they're medical students, residents, early stage, mid stage, or even late stage career radiation oncologists, how can we become better ambassadors kind of on the front lines as those primary clinicians for our specialty, just within our own hospitals and multidisciplinary teams?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm not saying that joining RAD is going to be the whole answer, but I think actually joining the mailing list, becoming regional champions, if you're interested in that. In fact, in North America, Canada and the States, we actually don't have many regional champions on board. And maybe that's because people are thinking, well, we don't have such a big problem with radiotherapy in our countries. But I guess it all depends on degree, doesn't it? And I think that it's a platform to meet with people, as I said, to get some resources, to think about ideas. So even in, you know, coming up to this World Radiotherapy Awareness Day, we've got obviously many requests, sort of physical and virtual. But in our own department, our radiation therapists have really jumped on board. We're having a morning tea. We're inviting our local hospital media in, who are very excited about it. We're having donuts with little RAD flags and a quiz on the back. We've got posters that we can print that are on the website that we can have in all the public facing areas. And we're actually folding origami cranes. I don't know if you know the story about the peace and the good luck that is supposedly comes from having 1,000 cranes from a very sad origin of actually the Hiroshima bombing and a young woman that died of leukemia. But that idea of sort of hope and peace that manifests is something that our staff and our patients have jumped on board with. So we've got more than 1,000 cranes already. We've got paper around the waiting room in our pretty RAD colours, and we've got people all over the place folding cranes, and we're going to hang them, and it's going to make for beautiful pictures and fantastic social media. So that's the sort of thing you can do on a fairly small scale, engage a lot of people that wouldn't really, you know what the problem is, or be a part of the feeling like they can be part of the solution. And then we're having a sort of more high level event through the University of Sydney, where some of the physicists are talking about some major radiotherapy innovations that they're working on, and that will be obviously higher level, more media, etc. And in the evening, we've got a careers night. So another one of our radiation therapists has actually organised a careers night that kids in their older, sort of their latter years of education that may have an interest in health or technical aspects of radiotherapy, physics. They may want to become doctors, but they don't know anything about radiation oncology. All the local high schools in our area have been invited, and we've already, like within a week of going out, we've filled all the places. And we're bringing the students and the parents actually into the Radiation Oncology Centre, which is a model we've used for medical students, is the model we've used for general practitioners. And as you would know, there is nothing like seeing the amazing high tech and beautiful facilities and incredible machines and the rapid evolution of our technology, and actually seeing how quickly patients are treated, how well they are, all of that stuff. A picture paints 1,000 words in terms of understanding how radiotherapy is so different from many other treatments in our health system.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that sounds wonderful. So it's amazing, right? Because the inaugural World Radiotherapy Awareness Day was just in 2025. So obviously you covered a lot of different things going on locally. What do you feel globally that you hope will be different or quote unquote bigger for September 7th of 2026?
Yeah. Well, look, I think just because we've sort of chipped away at getting societies involved, and then through that the regional champions, and through that the patients and community, we've already got many, many submissions through our website of activities that are going on or going to be going on. We collect all of those. We ask people for pictures. People write a little story about them. We can feature them on our socials. We feature them on our website. And we have a WhatsApp chat with all the regional champions. And at the moment, honestly, I can hardly do my real job, because the flood of ideas and materials, and we're doing this and we're doing that from absolutely all corners of the world, is just amazing. Like it's awesome. There's just so many things, and we're doing this in, you know, in the Middle East, and we're doing this in Asia, and we're doing this in whatever, Pakistan, and we're doing this all over the world. And we, as much as possible, we've tried to provide translations. We feel like we've luckily sort of really got some fantastic champions and supporters from Latin America, and we've translated some materials into Spanish. So it's really exciting now, sort of seeing posts and things in different languages. And that's something we hope that we can do more of, and get some of these people to like help us make content in other video and posters and things in other languages, so that they can reach their communities more easily. The enthusiasm is just mind-blowing. It's been really exciting.
That's so exciting. And especially with it being, to your point earlier, like how quickly things have evolved and how much involvement has occurred in such a short period of time. So how do you feel that RAD can become that sustained movement that actually changes access education policy over time? Obviously, this has been just an amazing start, but how does it kind of be sustained then over time to continue to impact the world?
I think the involvement of all of these regional champions and more people in their communities will be what helps sustain it. Obviously, the next step is to maybe concentrate more on how we can support people with making the impact on, you know, decision makers, governments, help develop some materials at the request of the people in those regions. What do they need? Do they need some guidance about, you know, how to pitch a parliamentary event? Do they need guidance? Do they need brochures? Do they need some ideas about how they can provide data in their countries to show that the radiotherapy services are not meeting need? So I think, again, those will be very individualized, and we'll very much rely on the people in their regions to tell us how we can support them. We obviously can't do everything. We have to help advise and empower people, but, you know, we're not in these the countries. So ultimately, it has to be through the people on the ground. But I see that happening already. So some of these events, for instance, there's a Nigerian radiation therapist who spoke to her colleagues in Nigeria. There was a lot of activity in Uganda and Tanzania, and through RAD, these people linked up, and it's like, oh, we've got a lot of the same problems. So let's make our event, we'll have some local ones, but let's also have a Pan-African voice for radiotherapy. Let's ask some politicians and media to be part of that. Let's actually make a lot more noise and cut through. And so I think it will be those sorts of things that will start the conversation at maybe a higher level that wouldn't have been able to happen with a small number of enthusiasts in their own countries and regions, feeling a little bit powerless.
Sure. No, that's incredible. Definitely strengthen numbers, and people feel more confident with, to your point, with they know there's like concerns, like problems kind of joining up to try to solve things that might impact both or many locations simultaneously is very, very important. So a couple more questions. So if we were to fast forward and have this conversation 10 years from now, and RAD has accomplished what you hope it would over that span, what would be different for a patient diagnosed with cancer anywhere in the world in 2036 compared to now?
Yeah, good question. I think it depends on perhaps where they are. But I think that we would hope that a lot of the stigma and fear about radiotherapy would be gone, or certainly diminished, and that there would be a whole host of people in the community, and particularly health professionals, who can actually support patients in knowing really what radiotherapy is and not perpetuating some of those fears and misunderstandings. At the level of accessing radiotherapy, I guess that depends on whether you're talking about, you know, a wealthy country or a very poor country. You know, to actually start by having some modern radiotherapy services in countries that have nothing would be the start. And to actually have health professionals that train in those countries, staying in those countries and actually building capacity in that country. Because as you might know, or some of your listeners will know, that at the moment, a lot of those countries do train people, but there aren't the jobs or the services or the facilities or the conditions that people would want to work in. And there's such a need for many of those professions in other parts of the world that often it's a bit of a drain from those really, you know, the developing countries of the people that do get trained. So I think there's a few answers to that, but we'd hope that there would be not only the services and machines, but the workforce and the people dedicated to, you know, building that and the services within the country. And then we would not be needing to explain so much about the benefit of radiotherapy and why it's so valuable and why it's safe, and all of those myths would be starting to fade away as something very archaic. That would be my hope.
That's awesome. So I kind of continuing with hope, if you could leave patients, healthcare professionals, policymakers, and just the whole radiation oncology community with just one message for this World Radiotherapy Awareness Day, what would you want them to hear?
I'd want them to hear and be part of one voice for radiotherapy. We can shift the dial, but we all have to work together. We have either the same or similar problems. We need to talk with the same voice. We need to have simple messages. We need to repeat them again and again and again. And we need to have confidence and hope that working together, we can make change, and we will make change for the benefit of our patients.
That's amazing. So for those listening, if they wanted to kind of find out more about World Radiotherapy Awareness Day and get involved, how would you best direct them?
I would start by going to www.worldradiotherapy.org. On there, you'll find that there's a lot of information about the campaign. It's not a vehicle for having a lot of knowledge about or information about radiotherapy for patients. It's really about the advocates and the resources and the networks that we have there to help you to advocate for radiotherapy. Have a good look. If there's things you can't find, I'd strongly recommend you to email, probably me would be the way to go to start with, because I actually can't remember the general email address. I think it's info@worldradiotherapy.org, but just sandra.turner@radonc.net.au. I'm very happy to link up with you and direct you in wherever I need to get more information or to link up with others. And I really, really would value everybody's support.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And I think I learned a lot. Everyone's going to learn a ton. And I think World Radiotherapy Awareness Day is such an amazing resource for our world. So thank you for all your effort and all your team's efforts and everybody that's joined in across the world to make this super special. So looking forward to seeing all the posts and all the excitement on September 7th. So
yeah, please follow all our socials. They're all on the website. Have a look. Yeah. Thank you, Brandon. I really, really appreciate your interest.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode of the Radonc on the Run podcast. Don't forget to subscribe for future episodes, and we'll see you next time.